show. We have one of the few shows that encourage babies to cry. Just for the realism it gives it. Well, after his one-legged victory against the Cowboys last week, with 312 passing yards, three touchdowns, the league has adjusted Aaron Rodgers' totals to 624 yards and six touchdowns on a two-legged basis. So, what do you know?
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Stephanie Lee. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, with Sarah Nix announcing. In this hour of What Do You Know, we try not to try with author and professor Edward Slingerland, plus all the news that isn't, and a dirty round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And now, our glorious leader, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, that's a small G and a small L. And it's ironic. I'm the ironic, glorious leader, so that's okay. I can take the irony of that. How's everybody? Pretty good, then? Yeah, cool. Of course, the big question around here Sunday is, can a one-legged man subdue 67,000 coffee-addled Seahawks fans? They figure it's six cups each. Whoa. That comes to 402,000 cups of coffee coming at them there at Century Link, also known as Guantanamo Stadium. You know, those Seattle fans think they're so smart, but not one of them has actually seen a Seahawk. I mean, what is a Seahawk? I don't think they exist. It's mythical. You don't know what it is. Well, there's got to be something they can do to subdue the Seattle crowd. Maybe Bill Gates could sing the national anthem. Maybe the North Koreans could steal their identities Saturday night. That'd be cool. Measles outbreak at CenturyLink. Possibility. Maybe Moby Dick will wash up there at Seattle Port, you know, and we'll have to go down and see it. Doesn't only happen once in a lifetime. And, you know, Seattle's got to have a noise ordinance. What about that? That'll shut those people down. Well, the Packers have to find some way of subduing the crowd without actually winning or scoring or even going downfield much. Or hopping to a first down. You know, that's not going to subdue them. They got the running game, sure, but they're going to need John Wayne Lacy on this one. That was supposed to be the crowd pleaser at the end there. I'm going to rethink this opening here, but I'm just saying, I'm not worried about it. I'm sure they'll do great. Okay, and all the other news that isn't, a bartender tries to poison Speaker John Boehner's beer. Fortunately, his crying into it diluted it. So he's fine. Mike Huckabee criticizes the Obamas for letting their daughters listen to Beyonce instead of his cover of Brown Sugar. No irony there, huh? Oil has dropped so low, they're pumping it back into the ground. The dinosaurs died for nothing. It's a hard choice, though, the price of oil. $2 on a gallon of gas or $2 on high hopes to win. Okay. Now everybody wants to fly to Cuba to pick up a 57 Bel Air. Despite the four different colored fenders and the John Deere motor, you know. My brother Clayton actually went there in 1955 with the Civil Air Patrol. Is going back, actually, to see if the dancer at the Copa is still there. At the Copa, you know. Copacabana. State of the Union. This will be an odd State of the Union with everybody on one side of the aisle. And Republicans sitting with their backs to the president, of course. Congressman Randy Weber plans to Sieg Heil the president during his speech. Yes, he does. I know it's not fun. Really, they ought to do something about him instead of voting him in. Let's see. Measles outbreak at Disneyland despite all the four-fingered gloves they make him wear. Possibly they have five fingers, and that's the one that's causing it, the one that escaped. This year's flu vaccine, turns out, only protects against the one you get from kissing a pig. So if you've been doing that, you're covered. President Obama did not go to Paris because, with all the heads of state there, tea times are all but impossible to get. All those guys golf. Come on. The alligator living for 40 years in a San Fernando backyard has been grand gatored in. I think that's pretty good. Okay, grand gatored in. How often do you get to say that? Princeton researchers create a laser the size of a grain of rice, then lose it in Chinese takeout. Ohio State's Cardale Jones is not entering the NFL draft in the hope that he'll move up to second string next season. Sports fans. The official state book of Mississippi is either going to be the Bible or anything by John Grisham, they've decided. So that's still up in the air. Kobe Bryant makes his reservations for a trip to Pyongyang, North Korea. So, because things aren't going so well for Kobe, see, so North Korea is the next logical. Anyway, not even you thought that was right. Okay. Not a single Lego nominated for an Oscar, so much for diversity. I say. And a small smattering of applause as Scott Walker tells a country club crowd he's anxious to be the next new what everybody hates about Washington. That's all the news that is, and thank you so much. Okay. And just one note around here, personal note around here from all the news around here, my puggle Tina died. And, Tina Feldman, as it says on her tags. It's hard to... I was thinking about wearing her tag, but that's kind of stupid, you know. Tina the Puggle Feldman.
But you did get a tattoo, didn't you?
No, I didn't get the tattoo. She left me with an existential dilemma, though. I told her every morning I had to go out and earn her dog biscuits. And now, what's my motivation? I canceled the New York Times because without Tina, I don't need the bags. Sure can't read the damn thing. I have sparrows that I feed, you know, but a poor substitute, I think, actually. They're demanding, but they don't give a lot, you know, don't give much back, those sparrows. They're out there every morning, though. They're just starting to annoy me. So I'm thinking of getting a rescue dog, although I still don't get whether you rescue them or they rescue you. If it's the latter, I'm in. I love you, Tina. Miss you. If you lose a dog, you know what it is. So, okay, that's all the fun news that there is. My little puggle. Speaking of that, though, trying not to try. This is something I've always tried to do in my life. It's kind of Zen, and I'm kind of Zen. I was a Zen Judas for many years before it became popular, and it never did. But Edward, or Ted, if you want to call him that, Slingerland is in Vancouver, B.C., and he is the man who is sort of the father of the art and science of spontaneity and doing things apparently for no reason. I can't figure out what it is. It's very Zen, and it's kind of interesting, and it's all based in Chinese philosophy going back many years. He's on the phone with us right now from Vancouver. Can I call you, Ted?
Yeah, please.
Hi, Ted. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. Have you ever been mistaken for Herb Brodsky? Because I have your picture here, and I have a friend, Herb Brodsky, and you look very much like him.
Yeah, he's my twin brother.
Yeah. He's in Denver selling coffee, but I thought.
All right.
So trying not to try is, of course, impossible, as all these things are, right? I mean, effortless effort, you can't do it.
It's a paradox, yep.
A paradox. Even having a paradox and not having a paradox, is it possible?
Yes.
So what good does it do us then, Ted?
It's good to know about the paradox. So, you know, the tension you have when you're trying to relax, you're trying to be spontaneous, you're trying to be happy. Yeah. There's a basic tension built into it. that these early Chinese thinkers were very much concerned with. Uh-huh. So I think part of the advantage of looking at it is that they spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get around it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, my theory is that it still goes on today in China, and that the Confucianists are now the communists.
Yes.
Because they're the ones who tell you what your behavior should be.
Uh-huh.
And the capitalists are the Taoists.
Huh.
What do you think about that?
The capitalists or the Taoists?
Yeah, because they are the ones who see the maneuvering ability along uh-huh. with the norms.
Huh. Interesting.
I think you got a treatise there, Ted. I'm happy
yeah.
to hand that over to you.
That's the next book. I think I'm going to run with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. The comeback of Confucianism in China is interesting. Yeah. I think they figured out the whole Maoism thing wasn't quite working out, so they needed something new. So this is the new official Chinese policy is we're all Confucians.
And, this all goes back to the Wu-Wei?
Wu-Wei, yeah.
Wu-Wei,
this idea of effortless action or
effortless.
Trying not to try. You know, so the early Confucians and Taoists all wanted to attain this state. So when you're in Wu-Wei, it's kind of like being in the zone if you're an athlete or this idea of flow. So you lose a sense of yourself as an agent, you're relaxed. You don't really notice you're doing anything, and yet everything works out perfectly. So it's kind of like being, you know, if you're a comedian, really being on, and just all the jokes are working.
Yeah. But if you're not a comedian, it means being totally obnoxious
and
horrible to be around.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. So actually, it's the opposite. So people like people who are in a way. So if you're in this state, you're relaxed, you're successful, but you also radiate this kind of charisma. So that in Chinese, unfortunately, it's pronounced duh. Sounds a little bit dorky, but it's something like charismatic
duh.
Power.
That's,
you radiate
that's a good,
duh,
that's
which
good
doesn't sound very appealing when you put it that way. But this is kind of I think we all know this, the kind of charisma that people kick off when they're relaxed, when they seem like they're, you know, having a good time, they're comfortable with who they are. We like people like that.
Yeah.
So they all wanted to be in the state of Wu-Wei, get this power, because for them it was the key to ruling effectively. Or if you were a Taoist, it was the key to kind of moving effectively through the world and having people leave you alone. Yeah. People make way for you. So they want to get this power, they want to be in this state, but there's this tension of if you're not relaxed, if you're not confident, how do you make it happen?
Yeah. And this all goes back to a butcher?
Yeah. So I think one of the best illustrations of this state is this butcher Ding, who's cutting up this ox for this lord in this ceremony. And he moves his blade. It seems like magic. He kind of doesn't touch any bones, doesn't touch any ligaments, and the ox just falls apart at his feet. And some people are horrified by the butcher story. I had a lot of vegetarians in my class who wanted to be named the poor ox. I thought that was very nice.
It's a metaphor.
The point of the story is that actually butchers were the lowest of the low in Chinese society. So part of the point of the story is the shock value, that this lord is watching the lowest of the low, this butcher, cut up an ox, and yet it's the butcher who is really the Taoist adept who really knows how to move through life. And at the end, the butcher explains how he basically stops thinking, he shuts off his mind, he shuts off his senses, and he can just let his spirit guide him through the ox.
Yeah.
And the Lord says, from the words of this butcher, I've learned the secret to living my life.
Yeah. So did he give him a position after that, or is he still a butcher?
Yeah, I think the problem is he's stuck being a butcher.
Yeah, okay.
But he's a really good butcher.
Always a downside to these revelations.
Yeah, there's always a downside to these stories. So
you know, what's interesting, though, that I read something about they found these very earliest stone implements, and they were butchering tools, and they concluded that all teaching began from butchering, because they had to show people how to use the tools, and that was the first actually teaching was showing what you do with these tools that we have here.
Yeah, and how to make them. They're actually
how to make
these
them.
These axes are very tricky to make as well.
Yeah,
yes.
So the origin of teaching goes back to butchers as well. So butchers are pretty important, I guess.
They're everywhere.
Conclude this. You've been described as a Canadian hedonist.
By whom?
My wife. I don't know. I saw it somewhere. And I'm wondering what that would be exactly. You know,
there's not a whole lot of us up here because it's kind of cold.
A Canadian
pleasure seeker.
Are you a pleasure seeker or something?
Yeah. So this is this comes up in the book in terms of this difference between flow and this idea of Wu-Wei. So a lot of people see the parallels between them. The idea of you get absorbed in what you're doing, you're very effective. The difference is for this idea of, you know, Csikszentmihalyi's idea of flow. So this was popularized in the 70s.
Yeah, I remember that.
For him, he thinks it's all about challenge, essentially. So it's about being in a situation where your skill perfectly matches the situation. So you don't get bored because it's not too easy. You don't get frustrated because it's not too hard. And you get in this flow state. And it really accurately describes kind of sports or people who are, you know, seeking out new rock climbing challenges. But what I don't think it fits is a lot of situations where people...
In Canada.
Yeah, what we do in Canada. You know, curling, it doesn't really fit curling.
It doesn't. So, curling's very zen, though, isn't it?
It's very zen. Yeah. So it doesn't capture situations where really the reason you're getting into this state is because you're absorbed in something that you care about. So it's about the... What I find helpful about this Chinese idea of wu-wei is the defining characteristic is you're absorbed in something that you value, something that you care about.
Okay.
And so that's why we like it. We like people who are relaxed or absorbed in something they care about, because then we feel like, you know, they're part of something that we can care about as well.
So what are these things you're doing that you care about?
I care about wine, gardening, kayaking. This all comes out in terms of, for the Chinese, it's very easy what you care about. You care about the Tao. So they believe in this kind of mystic, cosmic way. So one of the issues is if we want to update this concept, what does it mean for us? So what's the bigger framework that we want to get absorbed in when we're in wu-wei? And I think if you've got traditional religious beliefs, there's, you know, it could be your church or whatever it is you believe in, but it presents kind of a problem for people like myself who don't have traditional religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for a lot of us, the value systems we get absorbed in when we're relaxed and we're in wu-wei are kind of, you know, they're this kind of pastiche. We cobble them together from different things. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, cobble together their own spirituality. They take a little bit of Buddhism here. They take a little bit of Judaism here. They take a little Kabbalah, right?
Yeah.
Kind of mix and match spirituality. So some people do it that way. Other people just do it through moving from activity to activity that give them a kind of deeper satisfaction.
You know, so I see one, you know, kind of a disturbing analogy to this today.
Yeah.
In adopting someone else's cultural systems, this whole ISIS thing, where you have these kids who have no knowledge of this culture whatsoever, and suddenly they are devout in this particular branch of this religion, an entirely foreign cultural system, and are absorbed into it and total believers in it.
Yeah.
Isn't that similar to what you're saying, really?
That is. I mean, people want to be absorbed in something bigger than themselves, and so the danger is if you don't have these kind of activities, people you care about, you find it somewhere else. And so people, I think a lot of people who maybe are growing up in isolated situations, they don't have a good social group, they don't have a strong network of friends, they get attracted to these kind of, you know, it's an instant-made framework. And it's instant meaning and instant camaraderie, right? You're suddenly part of some bigger thing.
Yeah. And this thing about spontaneity, though, isn't it sometimes just more of a disorder than it is a noble pursuit?
I don't think so. So that's why spontaneity is not a great translation. So I really try to use the term wu-wei. We have to use spontaneity in the title because nobody knows what wu-wei is. But spontaneity in English implies this kind of, I spontaneously decided to blow off work and go to the beach. So it's some kind of self-indulgent or kind of bubbly. But for wu-wei is really about being in touch with the way the world really is. So when you're in wu-wei, you're actually seeing the world the way it really is, and you're engaging with it effectively. Yeah. So it's really, in some ways, it's the opposite of what spontaneity in the West means.
Okay. Get out of the way, because you're in my way.
Yeah. I'm in the way. Watch out.
Yeah. but it's, as you say, it's a paradox. So how can you try not to try to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. So the tension, the best way to get a sense of the tension is this game I talk about in the beginning of Try Not to Try. It's called Mind Ball.
Right.
And it's at my local science museum. You get sitting at either end of a table. You have this EEG sensor on your forehead, and it's basically picking up alpha and theta waves. Mm-hmm. So this is the brain activity you kick off when you're relaxed. And the more alpha and theta waves you produce, the more force you push on this little metal ball that's between you on the table. So the goal is to push the ball to the other end of the table, and you do this by basically out-relaxing your opponent. And it's incredibly hard to do. The first time I played, I was, you know, I sat down and I thought I was going to be really good at it because I study Uwe. I wrote a book about Uwe. I'd be really good at mind ball. And I just got crushed by the neuroscientist who runs the exhibit. And one of my big mistakes was, you know, we were playing for about 5 seconds and I opened my eyes and I saw that I was winning. The ball was moving down toward her end of the table. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, oh, I'm winning. And the ball turned around and started coming back toward me. And I was like, oh, no, stop trying. And it started moving faster and landed at my side, and I lost. So this, what I like about mind ball is it kind of collapses into this microcosm, this tension of how even in a situation where you know, so there are a lot of situations in life where we know we do best when we're relaxed, confident, when we're not trying. But if you're not in that state, how do you cause yourself to get into it?
Yeah.
How do you consciously try?
And the answer is you can't, apparently.
The answer is you can't directly.
Yeah.
So one of the things I look at is why, from a modern cognitive scientific perspective, it really is a paradox. And essentially you're trying to use your cold cognition, the part of your brain that's in charge of for communicating with other people and also making conscious decisions. That's the part of the brain that needs to shut down, but it's the part of the brain you're using when you know you need to shut down. So you're trying to shut down the thing that you're actually using. So it is directly a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
But most of what I basically do is walk people through the various strategies the early Chinese philosophers came up with to get you past the paradox. And most of them involve kind of trying to distract yourself or use your body as a tool for getting around a genuine mental paradox.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the story of the big gourds is instructive, don't you?
Yeah, no, I love that story.
Yes.
So that's, again, from the Zhuangzi. The Zhuangzi is one of the best sources of stories about Uwe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about the kind of flexibility you have when you're in Uwe. So he has this friend who's a logician, kind of uptight by the book, and he gets these gourd seeds and grows them, and they turn out to be these huge gourds. And he tries to use them as bowls, and they're too shallow. He tries to use them as a spoon, and they're too unwieldy. So he says to his friend Zhuangzi, you know, I smashed them because they were useless. And Zhuangzi says, well, you certainly have a lot of undergrowth in your head. You're too, and basically the guy, he's trapped by social categories. So those are the spoons and bowls are the two things that gourds are used for in early
mm-hmm.
China.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all he can think of. And Zhuangzi says, why didn't you make him into a raft and float around on the waters and lakes? So this kind of, when you're in a state of Uwe, you also get freed from preconceptions about how the world should be.
Yeah.
And you can actually really respond to it effectively and flexibly in a way that kids can and people who are relaxed can, and actually people who have had a couple drinks can. One of the things I look at in that section is some evidence that if you can kind of down-regulate your conscious mind, you actually are more successful in certain types of tasks that require creativity or lateral thinking.
Yeah, well, that's very much the Wisconsin idea of
drinking
to attain a spiritual state.
Those long winters, you guys really get into some Uwe.
Yeah, it doesn't matter time of year so much. It's just the idea of you can attain Uwe if you drink enough.
If you drink enough. So, and actually, Zhuangzi uses the metaphor of being drunk on heaven.
Yeah.
So it's a very powerful metaphor for him. But, of course, it's a metaphor, really, for the state you should be in.
Yeah. So the gourds are good. I do like, you know, in terms of a musician or an athlete or something, you could see how you could retrain the way you react.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, I love the Charlie Parker quote, you know, play the saxophone, you let the saxophone play you.
Yeah, that's the idea. So the feeling you have in Uwe is that the world is actually doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, you're not, or the game, you know, if you're an athlete, the game is moving you around. Or if you, you know, do a radio show, presumably it involves this kind of balance between being relaxed and letting the show go the way it's going to go, but also exerting some control. You need to intervene when it's time to intervene.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have
for this
right now.
This boring academic talking too much. See you later. So that's the, you know, it's this, if it goes well, you feel like you didn't do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like actually the show just kind of ran itself. That's the ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I don't have to do any work, that's that workless work to me.
Yes. It's appealing, right?
It's just a way of life, actually. we still come down to the thing, this is almost impossible to, would be great to be this way, to be spontaneous in the good sense of just acting as circumstances dictate, sort of. and correctly, because that's the Confucian one. So there's that. But I mean, how do you get there? You know, are some people just born that way? They have those instincts. We call it instinctual sort of.
Yeah. I think some people are probably born that way in certain areas of their lives, but I don't think anyone's born that way in every situation. So you've got to train it. So all these strategies assume that you got to start with some training. So and that's what the Confucians really continue to emphasize is the training part of it.
Yeah.
I think where the Taoism comes in is at a certain point, you've trained yourself, and you need to learn to let go and trust your embodied knowledge, trust the fact that your body knows what to do. And that's when athletes choke, or when, you know, you choke in an interview, you know, presumably you're in a job interview, if you're qualified for the job, you've got the training you already need. The key is just to relax into it and go with the situation and not get too uptight. We're often not very good at doing that. So one of the important things I think about looking at the ideal of Wu Wei is we live in a society where we're really trained to, if we run into a roadblock, just try harder. You know, we're always trying to strive harder and faster and work more. And we surround ourselves with stimuli. We've got our smartphones and we're always tweeting and checking email and doing these things. And I look at my students and they don't have any downtime at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that they don't realize that in a lot of situations, the only way to really do well is to create space and let your intuition and your embodied skills take over.
Yeah, and for the sports skills, I think you talk about the putt and the pendulum. That's instructive about.
Yeah, that's a great study. So this is a very famous study by the late Dan Wegner, where they told people they had pretty skilled college golf players putting. And in one condition, they said, you know, try to get it in the hole, but no matter what you do, don't overshoot. And those people overshot. So
right.
You tell people to do something, not to do something, they do it. Don't think of a white bear. You can't not think of a white bear.
Right.
So this is the paradox, right? And so people don't, you know, I see my students, they've got a paper due or something, and there needs to be creativity. They've got to write something interesting. And instead of actually giving themselves time to think about it, they just sit in front of a computer and pull all-nighters and stare at the cursor blinking there. And they often don't make progress because they don't know how to stop trying when it's time to stop trying and kind of let spontaneity do its thing.
Yeah.
Good kind of spontaneity.
But the pendulum in the swing itself. Talk about that for a moment.
Oh, the same thing with the pendulum. So, you tell people who are holding a pendulum not to let it swing in a certain axis, so don't let it swing horizontally, don't let it swing vertically, and that's precisely what they do.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of...
So should you give them the opposite of what the correct answer is or correct
action
is?
Yeah, so one therapy strategy that came out of this, Viktor Frankl used paradoxical therapy where he actually, people who had insomnia, he said, okay, well, lie in bed and really try to stay awake. That seemed to help, actually. People who are trying to stay awake will fall asleep. So sometimes you can use this, or people can help you use it to your advantage.
Yeah, you can outsmart yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what a lot of the Taoist strategies are about, kind of trying to use your body as a way to outsmart yourself to get around this paradox.
Yeah, of course, one thing arises. I mean, what if the Chinese were wrong?
Uh-huh. Well, that's, I mean, what I'm arguing is that...
There could be a Vedic or an Indian solution that's actually the correct one, and the Chinese had it all wrong to begin with, and we're up another tree here.
Yeah, no, I really think so. The reason I like looking at this period, the Warring States in China, is when all the early native forms of Confucianism and Taoism get formulated, is that they're basically exploring all the logical possibilities you can come up with.
Yes,
and you do see parallels. So like in the Hindu tradition, the Bhagavad Gita, you have something that looks exactly like the paradox of Wu Wei. So you can only attain the fruits, you can only get good achievements if you're not attached to them. You can only win if you're not trying to win, essentially, is what Arjuna is told by a Hindu deity. And so it's the same tension. You can only win if you're not attached to winning. And so what do? You fast, you do meditation. The strategies look a lot like the ones that the early Chinese were articulating. And one of the things I also argue in the book is it's this stuff makes sense from a contemporary perspective. So one thing we're learning about the mind is that we do have this very, if we're well trained at least, we have these very powerful intuitive ways of engaging with the world. And it's very clear that they're interfered with once we start using our conscious mind.
Right.
Our conscious mind is good for some things, but there's also times when it needs to get shut down. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not something that's really highlighted in recent Western philosophy, which tends to emphasize, you know, control and thought and rationality. So that's why I think the early Chinese material is a really helpful resource.
Well, I just have one more thing to ask you, Ted. Is all this going to be on the final?
Yes, it's all going to be on the final, but don't try too hard to study.
Oh, okay. And can right. you just write that on the final, and then as you get an A, then I say, I don't know.
Yeah, every year I always have some student turn in a blank paper.
Yeah. I tried, but I didn't do it, so it was very successful.
Yeah. And I say, that's great, you're not attached, so I'll give you an F. Since you're not attached, you're great.
Trying not to try. Edward Ted Slingerland up there in Vancouver, thank you very much. Nice speaking
with you. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
You betcha. You betcha. Okay, I'm not sure we arrived at any conclusions here.
How do you spell
that? How do you spell that? Oh, it's spelled W-E-I. Or Uwe, won't you let me take you on a sea cruise? It's spelled slightly different. Uwe, baby. I can sing it. I don't think I will. Right, hey?
Yeah, hey.
What part of that didn't you agree with there, John?
Oh, pretty much everything. If you're a musician and you're interested in that type of thing, there's a book by a piano player, a musician, Kenny Werner. It's called Effortless Mastery. That covers a lot of, actually, stuff in there.
How about masterless effortry?
We could call it that.
Effrontery.
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 Conclusionless conclusion.
Re. You can't put a re after everything.
No, you can't.
That's the only problem with that whole philosophy re.
If you did, I'd worry.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow. So, Whiplash.
No.
You're going to play Whiplash here from the movie the same name. Now, this is a great tune.
I never saw that movie.
No one can play it. And, no, you didn't see it yet. But Jeff did. Did you like it, though,
No, Jeff didn't see it. He was going to see it. That's why I thought.
You saw a different movie.
But they thought it was
Whiplash. Okay, that's fine. Those multiplex theaters, you never know what you're seeing.
I know, you're wondering at the wrong seven, movie. You know, and it's,
yeah, and you end up at Into the Woods or something like that. I don't really want to see this. What the heck is that? Okay, this tune here shows an effortless effort on your part.
Yeah, I actually wrote this tune. It's called The Waiting Game.
Sounds great. Jeff Hammond on the bass, John Tooley on the piano. I'm very zen.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm going to take this because we didn't give this out before. It's the four disclaimers. Chance for you to get on the radio on the ground floor and stay there, much as I have all these years. And, okay, I'll give that to you. So that's before the quiz, I'll say, you come down. You got your glasses?
I do.
Okay. All right. Or have your wife read it to you and then just say it out loud. Okay. She can whisper in your ear. Oh, I'm going back here already. No, I'm not done. Let's see. Packers by 7 points, says a school psychologist. How's that for recommendation? Come on, a school psychologist. When's the last time they were right about anything? Where is that school psychologist? There he is, right? You want to stand up and tell us your thinking there and what I might do for a living?
You?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Recommendations on jobs to kids?
I work with elementary students.
Okay.
So if they just behave, we're doing okay.
Yeah. And 7 points, how'd you arrive at that? Through the use of psychology?
A lot of math.
A lot of math. Can I see the figures?
Oh, I left that at home, but I'm thinking 7.
Okay. Well, thanks. That was very well explained, I thought. That's why we go to school psychologists. Because he went to school for it. What do you think about this whole question?
I think he's wrong completely. Yeah, that's what I do.
How do you see it going?
I'm a Cowboy fan, or anybody else that's playing the Packers. But, yeah.
I was going to say you're a Cowboy fan, but you don't have a horse in this race. But apparently it doesn't matter.
True. It's true. So.
Are you from around here and a Cowboy fan?
Yeah. I live in Sun Prairie. Yep.
How come you sound like a Cowboy fan?
Because I used to live in Texas. Yeah. Yeah. Most of my life. I've been up here for a dozen years.
Is it possible to get over that?
No. It's not. No. Actually, no. I still have... My parents are still alive, and I don't know if I would be if I got over it, so.
What's your name?
Wes.
Just use the one name?
Whitley.
Whitley is a great name. You should promote that. What do you do these days?
I'm an electrical engineer. I design computer control systems for power plants. Yeah.
Good job?
Yeah, it's good for me. Yeah, I don't know about the company, but.
And you're related to him in some fashion?
Yeah, I'm his wife.
How's that going?
Pretty good so far, I guess, yeah.
Amen.
Deborah Whitley.
And what brings you up around here?
We came here, this is my birthday present. I'm actually, my birthday's tomorrow, so.
Surprise, I brought him here for a surprise today.
Yeah.
Very surprised or even happy, I don't know. Was it a good present?
That remains to be seen, but yeah. No, yeah.
Hey, just remember, a one-legged quarterback beat you guys really bad.
Yeah.
Nice to see you. Thank you for coming. Nice to meet you. All right. Let's see. Wayne Glowack.
Right here.
Huh? Wait a minute. I'm not through reading your card yet. A little anxious. Oh, okay. We'll ask you. Come on. Stand up there, would you, Wayne? How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah. Where'd you get that shirt?
Oh, boy. Chicago.
Yeah.
A friend gave it.
What were you thinking? Oh, a friend gave it.
I was thinking it's perfect for radio.
Well, it's got flowers embroidered all over a striped shirt.
Well, I'm trying to brighten up the day, I guess.
Yeah. A friend gave it to you. Is it to your taste?
Don't you like it? I'm feeling a little oppressed here.
Trying to say neutral.
Yeah, I do. I love it, actually.
I've never seen a shirt like that.
What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
All right, it's just me. Nothing on the back, though. I would wear it the other way around, actually. But
okay.
Wayne Glowack, and you're marketing at the Overture Center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And but what is this here? You got your senior discount coming here?
Yeah. So I realized that we could save $10 if we applied for the senior discount, and it's kind of screwing me up a little bit because a few days ago I was young and vibrant, and now it's like going downhill. So can we just give you the $10 back and I can be a junior again or a sophomore? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but I got news for you. It was more than a few days ago that you were feeling vibrant. But I know how you feel. I'm the same way. I will never actually ask for a senior discount, although I'm entitled. If they give it to me, I will take it and not say anything. You know, if it's...
Or be on a radio show and admit it to everyone else.
Or that.
Okay, thank you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Okay, love the shirt. Do you like the shirt?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Okay, well, you have to live with that shirt.
Yes, I do.
Yes, okay. Lewis Miller of Madison, who's a retired teacher, who asks, is our moon a star or a planet? That's you? Thank God you retired from teaching, is what I... What did you teach, exactly?
Well, I was a special ed teacher.
Okay.
Here in Madison, La Follette High School.
All right, then I guess this would work, this question. I don't know.
Well, huh? Well, yesterday on QVC, there was a big discussion...
You watch QVC now you're retired?
It
gets sadder and sadder.
It was on This Morning America. They were showing how these people selling shirts on QVC got into a big argument right on the show, and everybody was kind of like taken aback
about whether the
moon was or is a star or a planet.
Okay. And you know why you watch QVC for the intellectual discussion?
What is the moon, by the way?
What is
the moon?
It's a satellite.
Satellite.
Okay, there we go. That's
all
what
right.
They...
Now, so now you're going to sit down. Now you're going to just do that to me and sit down. Okay,
well,
fine.
I asked the question and you got...
What were you looking at on QVC? What were you thinking about buying?
Well, I wasn't looking at anything, but they were shirts that looked like the surface of the moon. The
Did
pattern...
Look anything like this, gentlemen?
No, they
get me one of those if you can see it.
They were like tie-dyed.
Oh, they look like the surface of the moon, which is either a star or a planet.
Right, or cheese, or cheese, like, yeah. That.
Thanks very much, Louis.
Sure.
It's been very hallucinating.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Did you want to say hello? You look like you wanted to say hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I love your jewelry and bracelets and all that stuff. Are those new?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very pretty.
Thanks.
You have a lot of, like, jewelry bracelet type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a bracelet person?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. How are things going these days? What are you doing these days? Where are you going to school?
Boston Middle School.
Boston Middle, the Fighting
Eagles.
The Fighting Eagles of Boston Middle. And you know, I'll tell you what, if there's a teacher you want to say hello to, it could do you some good as far as, you know, grades and such. Is there one?
Brian McGuire.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what does that teacher teach?
Language arts.
Language arts. I see an A in your future.
Yep.
Your name is?
Hannah Shields.
Hannah? Very nice to meet you, Hannah.
Nice to meet you, too.
You hear those bracelets shaking? That's Hannah Shields, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to the What Do You Know quiz. Got your glasses on? Got your reading glasses on? You want to come down the aisle here and get this? Before we can play this quiz, there's certain legal ramifications. And, you know, legal ramifications. Those happen. To prevent that, we read the four disclaimers, and you are?
Danny Byrne.
Dave?
Danny Byrne.
Danny Byrne.
Yep.
You from around here, Danny?
I'm from Romeoville, Illinois.
Romeoville. That's okay. I've been through there. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's right next to Joliet. Quaint little city.
Oh, yeah, near the prison.
That's right. We call it. You bet.
Okay.
You ready? Number one is all questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, inactivity is worse for some than obesity, but you're less likely to do anything about it. Number three, the persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up office phones, trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Number four is all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. And anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. Too well done. You're too good, Danny. Are you do you do that voice work or anything?
I don't. I'm just a big fan of the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was too well done. Don't do it again, Danny. Let's see the hands of those of you who care to try them at the What Do You Know quiz, a chance for you to win fabulous prizes simply for being fabulous. And I thought I saw, yes, I saw your hand go up over here after some thought and perhaps a bit of consternation. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You are?
Michelle Fiala.
Hi, Michelle. Are you from around here or what?
I'm from Athens, Ohio.
Athens, Ohio. Beautiful Athens, Ohio.
It is beautiful.
What brings you to our fair city?
I'm here doing a double read day at University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm going to be playing the oboe in a recital in just a couple hours.
Oh, should you be working on your embouchure or something?
I should be,
soaking your reeds? Or?
But I found out this is going on next door, and I've loved your show for 20-some years.
Well, that's good enough for me. Come on down, Michelle. Come on up. Let's go up this way. Watch out for the bass player. He reads music, and that stand is deadly. Okay. That's our piano player, John, there. Michelle, if you have a seat right here next to the stuffed emu. Oh, yeah. Do you get sort of pre-performance, a little bit of the nerves?
You mean when I'm playing the oboe?
Yeah.
Yeah, often. I mean,
or other, what other performances do you do?
Oh, no, that's it, I guess, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, and that means it's probably a good performance, though, right, if you're...
Yeah, it's good to have a little bit of that. Yeah, you don't want to... Exactly what he was saying on the phone earlier. You don't want it to distract you so much that you're out of the zone of performing.
Your ooh-wee goes away. Ooh-wee.
And you have to get your ooh-wee back.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, what are you playing today?
I'm playing the Saint-Saëns Sonata for oboe and one of the Schumann Romances for oboe.
Oh.
And a duo with the professor here called Stomp Box by Robbie McCarthy and and one of the Gilles Silvestrini five Russian etudes.
Oh, John knows those. just run through them real quick, John.
That's the first one.
Perfect.
Yeah. That was good?
Too bad I left my oboe next door.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. And what are they doing here? Is this all here in this building?
No, it's at University of Wisconsin-Madison in their School of Music.
So you just soak in your reeds here?
Well, I'm staying in the Hilton next door. And I ran by this morning and saw the sign, "What do you know?" And I was like, it was about 9 o'clock. I did shower before I came over after the run.
Thank you. That was unnecessary. We don't require that here.
You can't smell over the radio, I guess.
No, I believe in natural hygiene. I think it's the best way. Like the ancients did. And that's very cool. That's cool. Michelle, someone plays along with you on this quiz. You know how it works?
Yes.
Yeah, someone out there plays by qualifying. Sarah, what am I saying?
You're trying to say that probably somebody at home wants to play along, and they should pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669.
Oh, they should.
And you will ask them a qualifying question. If they get the answer right, they can be Michelle's partner.
Okay, antibiotics. You know, that's a big thing, and they haven't had a lot of new ones in recent years, but recently there's been a lot of them. And here's the question. A promising range of new antibiotics has been developed from what surprising source? So they went to an entirely different way of finding antibiotics by going to a new source, which happened to be teeming with antibiotics. Teeming with them. I want to know where do they find these new antibiotics that they're now very excited about. Let's go to Milo and Mequon. Hi, Milo and Mequon.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I was better until I heard that question.
Yeah. You know, how did they do this? Usually they find stuff in the lab and culture it in the lab, and they did something different in this case.
I don't know. Maybe they took a look at cockroaches.
Oh, excuse me. No, I can see your point, though.
Yeah, they live around that dirt all the time.
Yeah, and they must be resistant to it, you would think.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Oh, well. That's a very good idea, Milo, but it's wrong. Sorry.
Darn it.
All right,
okay. Thanks.
All right, sorry. Right. Bye. Don't worry about it. Rebecca's in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Rebecca.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Okay, we had a conversation. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, is that great? Hey, listen, you need to pick me because I have a son at OU in Athens, Ohio.
That's where I'm a professor there.
You probably have him. Isn't he outstanding?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, Rebecca's kid.
He does play Yobo, right?
Rebecca's kid.
Actually, he's a game developer.
Oh.
But, you know.
Okay.
Okay.
But
we're just having a conversation.
Yes, antibiotics, where'd they find it? These new antibiotics.
I actually heard this story.
Yeah.
And it is from something that's common here in Ohio.
Yeah.
Horse dung.
What?
Horse dung.
Horse dung? Was it horse dung, really? I heard dirt soil, but horse dung is in the soil, so we're going to, especially in Ohio. And so, okay, we'll accept that. Congratulations. You qualify. All right. Over here. Okay, we got Michelle. We got Michelle. This is Rebecca. You've already met, I guess.
Yeah, hi Michelle.
Hi Rebecca.
Yeah. And okay. And but you, does your son play the oboe?
No, but he's brilliant. I'm sure he could.
Yeah. Tell him to start real quick because he got in here.
He plays the piano. He's musical in some ways. He plays the piano.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
right.
Great.
That's right. Piano is musical in some ways. I think that's exactly a good way of putting it.
Little.
Two of you cooperate on this. It's collaborative. We have various categories. Sarah, what are they?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Rebecca, you pick the first one.
I will pick current events.
Current events, right out of the news, maybe not. Who got all his wins restored? A sports question in the news everywhere recently.
All of his wins?
All his wins. I'll tell you, we're talking football here. I'll tell you, we're talking college football here.
The only college football we talk are the Buckeyes.
I know.
Yeah. Maybe you've heard
Too bad for you, Rebecca. Not that I blame you at this point.
Someone who is on probation?
Any idea?
Michelle?
I know no football at all. The only person I can think is A-Rod was drugs, but I think that was baseball. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. No, Joe Paterno, Penn State. They gave him his wins back, so he's, again, the winningest football coach before he was the former winningest football coach. And that would be...
That is sadly one wrong.
Okay, don't be so sad. It's all right.
And the categories left are people, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Michelle?
Let's go for things you should have known and learned in school had you been paying attention.
Okay. The moons of Uranus are named after the characters in the Decameron, Arthur Conan Doyle, or Shakespeare. The moons of Uranus.
I think they're, aren't they Shakespeare?
I'm thinking Shakespeare.
Yeah, she's trying to look it up, but she's thinking Shakespeare.
No, I'm not.
Shakespeare is right. Yes, congratulations. You got your Oberon, your Titania, your Ariel characters in Shakespeare. Yes.
One right and one wrong, and the categories left are people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Back to Rebecca.
Odds and ends, please.
Which one?
Odds and ends.
Oh, odds and ends. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is feeling cold contagious?
I should think it would be. Seems like if you see people.
You should think, or you do think it?
I think so. What do you think, Rebecca?
I'm going to go with that.
Yes, it is. It's contagious. Congratulations.
That's crazy.
You win the What Do You Know abbreviated quiz.
Michelle, when you absolutely must know how many grilled cheese sandwiches the average American eats in a year, you can find out in Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know from source books.
Yeah.
Rebecca, you can start your day with What Do You Know? Audience enthusiasm by drinking Stephen Brew's breakfast blend coffee and later relax with Costa Rican Terrasu, smooth and sweet from Madison's Stephen Brew coffee, which is coffee done right. And each of you can look back over 30 years with a dozen vintage glossy What Do You Know postcards, a pair of core value stickers, and, of course, What Do You Know the Party Game, including timeless questions, contestants, and the eternally youthful Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Yeah, Michelle, I'm going to give you a try not to try here. You can use that, read that during your concert.
Thank you,
very much. Very nice to meet you. Thanks for stopping by. Rebecca, hang on. Make sure you get that stuff.
Stick around. We're just getting started. In the next hour, Michael talks with Emmy Award-winning actor Tony Hale, plus another batch of Thanks for the Memos and a vintage edition of the What Do You Know quiz. That's all coming up when we come back. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, Producer International. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Stephanie Lee. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, with Sarah Nix announcing. In this hour of What Do You Know, Emmy-winning actor Tony Hale calls in. Plus, it's a roach-infested batch of Thanks for the Memos and a vintage round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And now, the man whose screenplay, Feldman, was the basis for Birdman, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. How are you then? Pretty good? I'm totally organized. I know it doesn't look that way.
Oh, you always
are. Huh?
You're always organized. Very organized.
I'm so organized that I really have to stop being so organized because my ooh-wee is affected by it. And I mean ooh-wee. Well, you know, each week at this time we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners just to prove that we have actual listeners. And they have actual memos. Or something like that. Unfortunately, I didn't look through these to get you a really good one here. Parking lot repaving. I don't know. Would you care for the roaches in the parking lot or attending Mr. Wellington's accounting class? Oh, I think I read that one already. Okay, so it's roaches in the parking lot memo. It reads as following. Facilities project management this morning met this morning with a pest control company, which has been retained by our landlord to begin a scheduled pest control program. They are starting today by spraying the exterior of the building and the restrooms to create a barrier against pests, specifically roaches, which have been infesting our building. Please note the following key points. The American species of roaches, which we have been experiencing, are not the result of uncleanliness, but are instead described as environmental. So they live here, meaning they breed underground and within sewer systems. Oh, that's what environmental means? According to the pest control company, the city is in fact currently dealing with a larger than normal population of this species of roach. The parking lot repaving occurring outside of our building is also contributing to the disturbance of these roaches. So we're actually disturbing the roaches. It's not the other way around. Bringing them out in larger numbers, it will take a few months of regular scheduled spraying for the pest problem to be completely under control, so you may see a roach on occasion. And for the next few days, you may see dead roaches on occasion, as they will, quote, come out to die, end quote, as it was explained to us. If you spot dead roaches, please inform facilities project management. We will make sure they are removed. Thank you so much for that memo, because it's the first one I grabbed. But we always enjoy your memos, whether they're about roaches or not, or environmental roaches as opposed to...
infestation roaches.
Thank you. That's a roach of a different color, I guess. And the roaches mentioned earlier as a source of antibiotics.
Oh, we're having a roach of a day. It's true.
Yeah. Everything is coming up roaches. So then where can they send these memos? Or
they can send them to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org with the subject line memos. Or if they're not quite clear on how to spell what do you know in that email address, they can go to notmuch.com and post it there. They can also, if they like, mail them in to 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706, care of What Do You Know? Thanks for the memos.
Yeah. And as far as all the news that is around here, really it's all Packers. And this is not really around here, but this is very disturbing, I thought. But the cheese ban? Yes, you heard about it. In Thursday's roundup of jumping on the Seahawks bandwagon, Douglas Schultz, manager of the city of Bain. See, Douglas Schultz sounds like he should be from around here. What the heck? Manager of the city of Bainbridge Island, Washington, population 23,000. He admits the executive order he signed on Wednesday banning cheese this Friday at City Hall could have been better thought out. It's in conjunction with this weekend's much-anticipated Seahawks-Packers game. Since Green Bay is in Wisconsin, and that state is known for its dairy products, the resolution says that if city employees were to have some kind of tailgating-type gathering on Friday, no cheese would be allowed. The only problem is that the Washington Dairy Products Commission says most cheese sold in Washington is made in-state and sold under various brands such as Lucerne or Tillamook. And the mayor says, well, yeah, the way it was written. That's a quote. Schultz says about Executive Order 121212, we even had some employees ask about blue cheese. What about blue cheese? I mean, do they make it in Wisconsin? Do we make it in Wisconsin? Anyway, Schultz has gotten so much publicity that Kelly Stickney, the city's community engagement specialist, wonder what that means, is scheduling the city manager's media interviews. On Thursday, Milwaukee TV crew was on the way for an interview, a Skype interview with another Milwaukee station was set for the morning. Then there was WLWKFM, a Milwaukee rock station, that beginning Wednesday and going through the end of Sunday, banned Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Heart, Jimi Hendrix, and Soundgarden. All Washington-type bands from its adult hits format. These artists are associated with Seattle, and the station used a tried-and-true radio stunt. The stunt has worked. The station's happy with it. If a Seattle radio station wanted to fight back and ban Wisconsin rock artists that actually had hits, they'd be hard-pressed to find some. So that's where it stands right now, and it's getting pretty ugly out there in terms of this panel. Tony Hale is joining us now. He's got a book out. It's a children's book called Archibald's Next Big Thing. And it's strange enough, it's very much like the book that we had, Trying Not to Try. It's a very Zen sort of children's book, and it's really quite delightful. He's online with us now from Los Angeles. No, he's not. Oh, boy. So Tony has, oh, that's the wrong line. Is this line here? Hi, Tony. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey. Oh, God. I had the wrong line, and I was really upset for just about a second there.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're not upset anymore. How are you?
I get upset really easily, though. I should work. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, it's going to go well. Good.
Yeah. It's really early out there, I'm sure. Thank you for talking with us.
Oh, my gosh. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had Julia JLD on the show, and she was in her pajamas when we talked to her. Are you in yours?
Yes, she's always in her pajamas. That never changes.
Well, that's a great thing. The book is delightful, and you're delightful, and you're wonderful. But we have like a generation gap here because the younger people around here say, you know, Tony Hale, Arrested Development, and the rest of us of a certain age, it's all Veep, you know, and Gary on Veep.
Yeah. Which the characters kind of are similar. They're both neurotic.
Yeah, they're both neurotic. And Gary is unbelievably obsequious. Can we say that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He's also just a codependent mess.
Yeah, he's codependent, and he's probably the closest to the vice president and without actually being close at all.
Yeah, I don't think he has any identity outside of Selina Meyer.
Yeah.
I think he's at home with just a lot of cat.
Yeah. He did find a girlfriend and a wife, though.
He did find a girlfriend. That did not last long because Selina Meyer, I think in his perfect world, they're going to be married one day.
Yeah, which we know is not going to happen.
No, in his world it is, though.
Yeah, the character itself in this case, in Gary, how much of that is you making that character into a Tony Hale character?
Well, hopefully not much, or I would need tremendous amounts of therapy.
Yes.
He kind of started off as, you know, he's her helper, and he's kind of always. Doing whatever she wants, but then what's fun about doing a show is you see the character form with how the writing changes. So wherever the writing goes, you kind of adapt to that, and then like you'll read something, and you'll be like, "Wow, this character is a mess."
Yeah.
So then that's kind of how it develops.
And it's such a great show too, because it not only is it like the best written show ever, comedy show I think, but everyone gets their own. Every character gets his own day, his own moment on the show.
Yeah, I think Gary's waiting for his day, though. Gary's waiting for the day that he's going to be able to speak up and be able to cuss somebody out.
Yeah,
always just cuss that.
Yeah, does that happen in this season, or can't you tell us that?
He steps up to he gets a little fiery this season.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. And of course, I think maybe you're best known for, you know, Dave in Stranger Than Fiction.
Oh yeah, that was a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and, or maybe the guy who gets pulled out of a car window by Melissa McCarthy
for picking up a prostitute.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was an amazing piece of comedy. I thought.
Yeah, my family is very proud.
Yeah, but it can't be that easy to be pulled out of a car window.
That was fun. Well, working, you know, Melissa McCarthy, who was the lead on that movie, is just so fantastic, and she's such an amazing improv actress. And so we were just kind of playing with it, and we thought, and we just came. It was either her or the director was just like, I think you just need to yank him out of the car. and in the back of my mind, I'm like, wait, am I involved in this decision? Or so then we just kind of went for it.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I saw on Funny or Die, there was a little piece that you were involved in about working with you as a talent and a tendency to go, what, over the top?
Yeah, the joke was that I can't do anything if it's not broad. So any kind of subtle thing, I just turn into, like, pretty much mime or something.
Yeah.
So, that was fun. It's acting, Tony's acting style.
Yeah.
Oh, and I know what it was. They needed a tranquilizer dart gun to calm me down.
Yeah. We actually sort of have that. Would you mind if we played that just as, and then you can tell us whether or not this actually is sort of your acting style. Okay, this is it. Tony Zakenstein.
I'm known for kind of playing wacky, broad, kind of neurotic characters. Buster Bluth on Arrested Development, Gary Walsh on Veep. But, I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I am capable of so much more.
Great. We got that one, all right? Yeah. Tony, in this one, you're going to have a bee buzzing in your face.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just with facial expressions, react to that bee, okay? Nothing too big. Just keep it real. Keep it.
Say no more.
Okay, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, great, guys. Here we go. Action.
This is our day.
This is our day.
This is our day.
I know. It's like we've lived our whole...
There's a bee! Kill it! Tony, let's pull it back. Come back about a mile, okay? Let's just think smaller, 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 okay? Yeah. Just think of yourself as an ant. Play like an ant.
Mm, okay. Yeah. I'm an ant.
Can I get a little help, please?
I'm gonna ride that bee like a horse. Boom.
Cut! Got it. Nice. Working with Tony is an absolute nightmare. Flat out. He's the worst. But with the tranquilizer darts, we were able to get a good performance out of him.
I mainly work with lions and tigers and bears. Tony's the only actor I work with. They give me a call whenever he's on set.
One dart for comedy, two darts for drama. He's a brilliant actor with a dart.
I'm a big bad lawyer with a suit and a tie like my daddy wears.
Maybe I'm defending my client because she's innocent. And maybe I'm defending her because I'm in love with her.
Diane! May I present you an exhibit A?
Cut. That's it. We got it. Thanks. Real good.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm a bit scared at the amount of tranquilizer we are putting into Tony, but he is terrible with animals.
This next project is getting a lot of Oscar buzz already, so let's just say we're gonna be using a lot of darts. Tony died again.
Clear!
Did someone text his family and let him know he's gone?
That's it. Oh, we lost Tony Hale on that shoot.
I know. I need a lot of darts. I need a lot of darts. A
lot of darts. That's not at all true of your acting style, right? That's.
Well, we'll see.
That's a part of the
show budget. They have to hire a tranquilizer dart.
Yeah, by the way, I loved your drunk history as Meriwether Lewis.
Oh my gosh, those are so fun to do. I learned so much from that show.
Yeah.
I only learn history when like drunk people are telling me about it.
Yeah. It's a novel concept. It's really funny and stuff. How hard is it to do someone else's drunken lines?
It's so fun because what they do is they do a playback and then you just kind of mouth the words, but you know, all of a sudden you'll be talking about history and then they do a big burp and you have to mimic the burp, and it's just so fun.
Yeah. Now, you're from what, West Point, New York? Is that right?
I was born in West Point, New York because my dad taught nuclear physics at West Point
Academy. Okay.
I know. And then he birthed me. So,
all on his own. Did. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So.
All on his own, I know.
Yeah.
It's nuclear physics.
Yeah. Not a military background?
My dad was in the Army, and I was an Army brat until about the seventh grade when we moved to Tallahassee, Florida, and he retired, and that's where I kind of spent my high school years and middle school years.
Yeah. Do the Hales themselves go back to the Revolutionary Hales and all that?
I'm sure they do, and I should probably research that. So maybe you should just get me really drunk, and then I can talk about some kind of intelligent history.
Yeah, we could have you play one of the old Hales.
Exactly. I'll be Nathan Hale.
Yeah, one of the Nathan Hales. And it's not true that you were offered the lead in American Sniper.
I I was offered the lead in American Sniper.
Yeah.
The character was going to be a lot quirkier, and then they went a different direction.
And your children's book, Archibald's Next Big Thing, was this because you have a young daughter that you decided to write a children's book? Or?
Yeah, well, I do have. I have an amazing daughter. She's 8 years old. Her name is Loy, L-O-Y. But the children's book came about because I met this artist in Los Angeles named Victor Huckabee, who had created this character Archibald. And we had talked about, because I wanted to write some kind of children's book because there's been a pattern in that I'd noticed that every time I got, and I've had some great gigs, but every time I got a job, I was still looking to the next job.
Right.
And I think we can get so focused on our next adventure that we miss the adventure that we're on. So it's about a little chicken who's always, he goes on these great adventures, but every time he's on an adventure, he's like, I got to get to my next big thing. And there's this little bee that travels around with them, and it's like, you got to just be, man. You got to just be.
Yeah.
So it's a lesson that I'm trying to learn still, but I love it, and it was really fun to do.
Yeah, so it is sort of a memoir.
It's a memoir. What if that was my only memoir?
It would be a good one.
It's about a semi-bald chicken with a bee. That would be Tony Hill's memoir.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the chicken does resemble Tony Hale.
He does. He does. And he's actually, he also, one of my favorite characters on The Muppets was Beaker.
Yes.
And he also kind of looks like him, so I love that.
Yeah, that's great. By the way, at West Point, was there a dramatic academy as well as a military academy? How did you get into the drama?
When I moved to Tallahassee, Florida, my brother, who was older than I was, he was really into sports, and I was the kid that just wasn't into sports. I actually remember being in a swim meet once, and I stopped in the middle of the swim meet, and my dad was like, what are you doing? You gotta swim, keep swimming. And he said, I had this look on my face that was like, why? I'm exhausted. So I just wasn't into sports, and then my parents found this great theater group called Young Actors Theater that they signed me up for, and I just fell in love with it. And so that's how I started getting into acting in high school.
Yeah, and did you do prop? Did you go through improv, or did you?
You know, I did mainly when I moved to New York after college. I mainly did sketch comedy. We did a lot of kind of writing fun, topical sketches, and just goofing around, and that's where I did most of my comedy in New York.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm going through your whole list of credits here, and they're substantial. I mean, we got Angry Birds, you know, the most recent, I guess. And I guess you're doing something called what is this thing called?
Also, if you also look at the very end, there's a credit called Raging Hormones,
yes.
Which I never did.
Oh, you never did that?
No, I don't know where that came from.
How did you get associated with Raging Hormones?
I have no idea, but to this day, I have no idea how that got there.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's...
we'll cross that
off. I don't
know
if there's another... Yeah.
We'll cross that off, but Yoga Hosers.
Oh, yeah.
That's coming up.
Yes, that was done with Kevin Smith, and it's really fun, really fun.
Yeah.
He's just such a cool guy, and that was one of those things, like, you never, because you kind of, it was in between jobs, and you go for, just to kind of, you know, I was there for like 2 days, and it's really fun, and you don't really see the whole picture, how it's going to come out, so I'm always eager to see how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. Now, Bud Selig Must Die was a short.
Yeah.
And he's from around here, actually. He went to the same high school I did, Bud Selig, here in Milwaukee, and Washington High School. And how did that play well?
Well, he died.
Yeah, he died. He dies in it. Okay, so it came out well.
My buddy was doing. He had this funny thing about he was just doing the short, and I just had some time. He's like, "You want to be in it?" I said, "Sure." It's not a very involved story. It's like, hey, Tony, you want to do it? Sure. Okay, and then you do it. But yeah, it was with John Heater. Me and John Heater did it.
Yeah. And actually, the Sanjay and Craig TV series, I missed that entirely. How is that possible?
Well, it's on Saturday mornings, and my daughter loves it. And it's just this. I play this character named Mr. Nudeman, who has he's this neighbor to this kid and his friend Snake, and it's just a quirky Nickelodeon cartoon. And I'm telling you, doing animation is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I just play this, you know, again, a neurotic character, which is, I think, just the story of my life. So
yeah,
it's really fun to do. Really fun.
Are you actually yourself neurotic or not at all?
Tony 2.0 is probably is not after a lot of therapy. Tony 1.0 was a mess.
Yeah, but at least he could use all that. I mean, it served you well.
Oh yeah, I got a huge vault of memories that I pull up.
Yeah.
Comedy comes from a lot of pain.
Yeah, apparently it does. I've never had a lot of comedy as a result. I haven't had enough pain. Consumer doc.
You gotta get on that.
Yeah, I got to. Up all night. Law and Order, Special Victims, and you were on Sopranos. I know that's what I wanted to ask you about. And what did you do on the Sopranos? Because I don't recall it.
I played a nurse who was giving Uncle Junior his chemotherapy when he was going through when he had cancer, and I was so that was because at the time when I was living in New York, there was the big jobs in New York were Sex and the City and Sopranos,
right.
And so I got this little bit role on Sopranos, and I was so terrified. Because I was just surrounded by these kind of iconic, like, thug-like characters. And here's, like, quirky Tony Hale walking in and being like, here's your medicine. And so I almost pooped my pants that day.
Yeah.
I was terrified.
Was that your only line?
Poop my pants?
Yeah. Here's your medicine.
I don't even think I had a line. I probably said a line and then just, like...
They cut it.
Just... Could it? They cut it because I look so terrified.
And so you don't remember being the wise guy driver in Raging Hormones, though. That was not you.
I don't remember being the wise guy driver. No. I do not know where that came from.
Yeah, but Dawson's Creek, yes.
Yeah, and Dawson's Creek was another one of my first things. And I remember meeting, James Vanderbeek was on that show. Mm-hmm. And when I got the role, I'd never really done any TV, and I was... excited because I'd never worked with, a quote celebrity. And so I was thinking, hey, maybe James Vanderbeek and I will be buddies and this will be fun. And literally all I had was two lines. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to have a great friendship.
Yeah.
So I remember coming on that day and I'm not kidding. He was wearing a lot of coats. He had like two or three coats on. And my very first thing I said to him was, dude, you look hot. And he kind of gave me this look like, what? And then before I could explain myself, he was called off the set. And then I literally, my second thing I said to him was, meant take it off. So to this day, I think he thinks I was just coming on to him the whole day.
That accounts for why you often have just one episode in any of these series.
Exactly. They're like, do not bring that guy back.
Tony Hale is trouble. Yeah. But you were on Sex and the City, though, too, weren't you, besides its brand?
I was. I played Tiger, who was the... this is another story, actually. Because I was a photographer's assistant when Kim Cattrall was having... I don't remember her character. Was it Samantha was her name? Maybe I can't remember. But she was having nude photos taken. And so I was the photographer's assistant who was just kind of had to stare at her all day when she was taking shoots. And I went up to her and I, trying to be the nice guy, I was like, hey, Kim, I just want to apologize because I have to pretty much Google you and stare at you all day, thinking that she would be like, oh, that's sweet. She thought I was a freak.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And that didn't go well either. So needless to say, I was never invited back to Sex and the City either.
You know, so it's kind of surprising you've done as well as you have. Given some of these...
It's a daily miracle.
Yeah. Because, I mean, isn't there a lot of word of mouth on these sets? You know, Tony Hale is a freak.
Tony Hale, he's a freak.
Yeah.
Probably. They just don't say it to my face.
Yeah. But Veep, you're being... By the way, I think Veep is like the best casted show ever. You know, everyone
on
there.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's so fun. And I tell you, the great thing is because we shoot in Baltimore, mm-hmm. and I live in Los Angeles. And so it's really tough to be away from family. But if we had to be away from family, those are the people I want to be with because they're so kind. And it's just and the thing is, you know, we're the writers write the script, but then we have 2 or 3 weeks of rehearsal before we shoot, which is very rare for television.
Mm-hmm.
And so it enables us to really improv and come up with bits and let the material gel. And that is just such a gift. And so it's a really giving environment. There's no ego. There's no entitlement. And so it's really fun.
Yeah, it seems fun. Because I follow on Twitter a number of the people, and yourself included. And there's some pretty cool Instagrams that come out of it. So
We just have a blast.
Yeah,
we do.
I enjoy that. And who would think, it's an Italian guy who lives in England writing about American politics, right?
Yeah, Armando Iannucci.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, they're all Brits.
Oh, they're all Brits.
Every single one of the writers is from the UK.
Yeah.
And so it's their interpretation of American politics, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
This is a big reason why I love the show is because, you know, I think with politics, it is true. You know, you kind of hear these sound bites and you see the posturing and you hear the perfect speeches that are well written, but you never see behind the scenes. And you know these people freak out behind the scenes. I mean, mm-hmm. they're pressure cookers for a tremendous amount of anxiety and big decisions. So you know they lose it behind the scenes and have breakdowns, cry and scream and get insecure. And I love that our show takes you back there. You know, it takes the camera behind the scenes, and I love that.
Yes, yes, it's watching her walk through a plate glass door, I think, is one of the magic moments.
I know. And she when she walked through the door, for those who haven't seen it, you know, her face got really cut up, and it was awful. And my character, you know, was just traumatized because she's just, in my eyes, she's Jesus.
Right.
And so, and she looked at me and she says, "Gary, do you have a mirror?" And I lied and said, "I don't. I don't."
That was great.
I didn't want her to see it.
Julia is so brilliant. She's absolutely amazing, you know.
And it's not only is she so funny, but I believe her. She carries the authority of that role.
Yeah.
And I just, it's so inspiring.
Yeah. And it's a great character. Her character is great because she's intelligent and completely ignorant at the same time. She has this division. She doesn't know what she's talking about, but she's also extremely intelligent. Yeah.
Never. Yeah. She's in a position she should never be. Our nation is in a lot of trouble next season.
Yeah. And that scene where she dropped all her makeup on the Oval Office rug, she went to see the president. And I mean, they're just brilliant scenes. And her as a person, she is so generous to the rest of the cast because, I mean, I think everybody comes off great and everyone gets their own moments on there that are just brilliant.
Yeah. And that's the thing when you have, you know, whoever's the lead of the show is called the number one on the call sheet.
Yeah.
And that number one on the call sheet sets the tone for the entire set. If they are difficult or if they have entitlement or anything, everybody's walking on eggshells. If there's someone like Julia who is so gracious and kind and a team player, it just sets such a creative, giving environment, and it makes such a difference.
Yeah. For you yourself, you seem to be in a lot of movies now. You're getting a lot of parts in a lot of movies, so you're in demand.
I guess. I'm so thankful to be working, man. I am just so happy for a gig.
Yeah.
I will say it's really nice now because we finished shooting Veep before Christmas. And so after Christmas, we traveled a little bit and then got back home to Los Angeles. It's really nice to be home. And I love taking my daughter to school and picking her up and going to her. I mean, I just love just kind of being back in routine. So that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, those are the best years. Your publicist is telling us right now you have to go. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
But
you have to go. I don't know where you're going, but you have to go, Tony.
Okay, well, I've got things to do.
Okay.
I've got things to do.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Eat cinnamon rolls on a Saturday morning. but, guys, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Tony Hale, it's a pleasure. Archibald's next big thing is the book and Veep and everything else. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony Hale. Have a wonderful weekend.
He has to go. Wouldn't it be great to have a publicist told you when you had to go? How would they know when you had to go? Sometimes, you know, even you don't, you're not sure you have to go or not. I think I had to go. Earlier, I thought I had to go. No one told me, so I didn't. That's a cool thing. Tony Hill, yes. Archibald's next big thing. Who would like, do we have someone here who would enjoy this book? Okay, well, first one afterwards. I don't want to deliver it right now, but if you have, like, 8-year-old or whatever, we'll save that for you, because I don't want to carry it around. It's a big book, is what I'm saying. All right, so then, there, hey.
Hey, you have a publicist, right?
Publicist. What do they do exactly? They get you publicity?
They get you publicity.
Oh, well, I must have one, you would think, at this point in my career.
Because you have people. You have a team.
People?
Uh-huh.
There are people around me. I don't know if any of them are actually working for me.
Family members I don't think count. But
no, they don't count. Okay, so now this number here. Are you doing a lot of writing, by the way? That last song I really thought was great.
I actually played it on the show, maybe a year ago or something, it didn't really come out well, so just kind of redid it, worked on some stuff,
and
came out better.
Better all the time. Kissing the Lips of Love, have you reworked that one?
Oh, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah.
That'll be a collaborative effort between you and I.
Yeah.
When I get it done, you can finish the lyrics.
Yeah, I'm
the Kissing the Lips of Love.
So far, that's all we got.
Yeah. So that's what I'm working with.
Okay, yeah, work with that. Let me know how that comes out. And then this tune here.
This is
here,
a little tune by a pianist, Tommy Flanagan. It's called Eclipso.
Sounds great.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Okay. So, what are you going to do when you retire? I'm going to panic because I have absolutely no retirement skills. I don't play golf, play tennis, but and then I don't walk for 3 days afterwards, and I don't paint Civil War miniatures. I don't know what do people even do. Are you retired?
No, I'm not.
It's because you don't know what to do, right, when you retire?
Something like that.
Yeah. What are you doing right now?
I work as an insurance agent.
Okay.
Yeah, for AAA.
Okay, so you still be writing riders, you think, when you retire, or just for kicks?
I'd be writing me.
Okay, all right, cool. So that's, I got to find something quick, I guess. If you were a cephalopod, what kind of cephalopod would you be? Same old questions. I'm tired of the same cephalopod questions. From Brady, who claims to be a squid wrangler. Are you a squid wrangler? I'll tell you what, you head down that way, and I'll head in that way, because I want to ask you about this, okay? By the time I get there, you should be there. And don't worry, we'll find out what this is all about. I'm going to get to the bottom of this birthday party that's going on here. So a squid wrangler job description.
I raise, feed, breed squids for a lab on campus.
Oh, you do? So you're a squid wrangler. You are a squid wrangler.
A squid wrangler.
What type of squids are they?
They are Hawaiian bobtail squid. They're kind of small. They're cute.
They're nice. And these are, you do horrible things to them, of course.
I don't do the horrible things.
Yeah. Horrible things are done to these cute little squids. For a good purpose, however.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Well, they've got a symbiotic relationship with a bioluminescent bacterium. So they kind of light up at night so that they can catch prey and evade predators. Yeah. And we want to know how that works. And that'll probably be useful at some point.
Destroying other cultures and countries. And
of course.
If we can get them to glow at night, we can see them and destroy them.
Yeah, we're planning to, sort of throw squid at them.
So it's bioluminescence is what the study is about.
Yes.
Because I've heard they've used some of that, and they put it in plants and things, and so they get plants that glow at night. Mm-hmm. So you can, go out there and hoe your garden at night. Because the plants are all glowing. Some of the uses you kind of wonder about.
To be honest, I'm not entirely sure where they're going with it. I know that they...
not your job. It's above your pay grade.
I'm just... feed them
stuff. Before you were a squid wrangler, what did you wrangle?
Menards.
You're a Menards wrangler. Much the same.
I wrangled carts at Menards. Yeah.
Much the same sort of business at Menards there. And did you save big money?
I saved other people big money.
How crazy does that song drive you if you have to work there 8 hours a day?
Yeah, they play it like once an hour. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. They play it more once. Isn't it more once an hour? Because it seems to be plays continuously. But can you tune it out if you're actually working there and you don't hear it anymore?
No. It never gets old.
Terrible. No wonder you went into squid wrangling.
Yeah.
What's next for you then? What do you think?
I've actually got another job lineup because that squid, you know, they have to like fly to Hawaii to catch these wild squid to bring them back.
You get to do that?
No, I don't, unfortunately. Oh, but the whole lab is moving to Hawaii. So I had to find another job, and so I'm going to be working.
Can't you move with them? Well, they dump you when they move to Hawaii?
I don't have the money to move to Hawaii. They don't pay me enough. So,
So what are you going to do?
I've got a job with a guy who's going to be setting up a cichlid, like a fish hatchery sort of on campus.
Oh, so you're staying in the aquatic environment.
Yep.
So does that pay a little better? I don't mean to pry here.
I don't know. It pays in credits.
You should always... It pays in credits. Oh, it's because you're still in school.
Of course.
Oh, and what's your study then?
Zoology.
Figures?
Yeah.
Okay. Why did I think of that? Oh, and then, are you a senior now, or how many?
Sophomore.
Sophomore. Okay, a lot of wrangling ahead of you. So. Your name is?
Brady.
Brady.
Hirschfeld.
Brady Hirschfeld, ladies and gentlemen, squid wrangler. Put her there, Brady.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. Best of luck to you. All right. I got all the cards. You're here wearing your hats. You're tired of wearing them. The crown hurts. Does it hurt?
Pardon me?
Does the crown hurt?
It does. Yes. It does. But that's
because uneasy is lies the head that wears the crown.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And it's, I got all these cards saying various things of, oh, that's the cephalopods. Yeah. You're not a cephalopod. Why is Nancy Kelch-Brenner famous in Rockford, Illinois, and things of every variety of that? So are you Nancy Kelch-Brenner?
Yeah, and you pronounce it really well, actually. That's very good.
Well, come on, well, you want to stand up here? Is it your birthday, right? Yeah. It's her birthday, ladies and gentlemen. Nancy Kelch-Brenner of Rockford, Illinois. How do you have this many friends? I have, like, maybe one or two.
Are you sure they're all my friends?
I don't know. But otherwise, they came here with
you. Very fortunate, yes.
How does one acquire?
Apologies for the hats and the... Okay.
I wish I would have thought about it more, you know, and I would have had more friends, you know, at my birthday party instead of just the three or four stragglers that come in. No. How do you know all these people?
Wow. All different kinds of ways. We're just friends from... Rockford and from Chicago forever ago. And
Bunko.
Yeah. Bunko. Or as we like to call it, Drunko.
Okay, let's talk about the Bunko Drunko connection. What is that?
Bunko is a game that's really just an excuse to
get drunk
and hang out. So, yes. So our families accuse us of never really playing. So they've nicknamed it. Yeah, that might be true.
So, how many of you are the Bunko crowd? Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's just about everybody.
So?
Yeah. And this was so back in college you played Bunko?
No, now we play that, okay. Yeah. So this was my surprise birthday party, so, yeah.
Is this what you wanted?
Yeah, I said, please don't go to Chippendales. And so they found the opposite, sorry.
I've never been called the opposite of Chippendales. So you're saying I'm more Dale and Chips, is what you're saying.
Yeah, fish and chips, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Have you done birthday parties at Chippendales? Is that?
Maybe some of them might have, but no.
Yeah.
So this is good. Yeah. It's all good.
Is this just the start of the celebration? Is just coming to what do you know? And then where does it go from?
Because I'm not, and this is really difficult for me. I like to plan, so this is.
You're the planner who can't plan. The planner who doesn't plan.
My comfort zone, I'd say.
Okay, the planner not planning.
Yes.
So that's very zen.
It's killing me.
So you don't know where you're going next?
No.
Does anybody know where she's going next?
We do know where she's going next, yes.
We can't tell her, though?
Can't tell her, no.
She's not in any danger?
I don't think so.
Is this perhaps segueing into Chippendale?
That's later, yes. And no.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Stick a dollar. She stuck a dollar in my shirt pocket. I don't care. I'm keeping it. Thank you. It's the first dollar I've earned that way. Happy birthday to you. We have a little something for the birthday party, don't we?
Wine?
I don't think they drink.
No, they don't drink.
How many bottles can we give them?
We could give them a couple of bottles of delectable Wisconsin wine from Wollersheim Winery.
Yeah. Just two bottles and 30 drinkers.
It's a thimble each.
Thimble each. Okay. Well, happy birthday. Happy birthday to Nancy Kaltzbrenner, Rockford, Illinois. All right. Oh, okay. Fine. Too bad. We don't get to hear about Dave Wormer's seed corn production. I was sort of interested in seed corn production. Anything you want to say, Dave? Dave, still here? How's it going? Good year for seed corn?
Yeah, very good year.
Okay. What varietals do you prefer? Oops, excuse me.
Several.
Uh-huh.
Lots of varieties out there.
Yeah. What's the one that's the biggest, the most interest in right now?
Probably rootworm resistant
corn. Rootworm resistant seed corn. That'd be great. Do we have that now?
Yes.
It's not like radioactive or something, is it?
Not entirely.
There you have it, the seed corn report, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Dave. All right, we're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz. Chance for you to be fabulous and win some prizes while doing it. So who wants to do it this time? The quiz I'm talking about here. Look at this gentleman here who has this authentic What Do You Know sweatshirt. It finally paid off for him. Excuse me again. I keep tripping over you. I apologize. Yes, come on down here. Look at this. We haven't seen these in years, and that's not faded at all, is it? On WCAL. Okay.
It doesn't exist anymore, but...
It's amazing that we do. But the show is all cracked, and I love it. It's perfect.
It's about 15 years old.
Yeah. You are?
John Swanson.
John, and where are you from?
Minneapolis.
From Minneapolis. And what brings you here?
It's my birthday, or a couple days ago, so I got brought to Madison a little...
Holy cow, it's a birthday destination. Yeah. Come on down here, John. Well, that's good enough reason for me. You want a hat? No, I don't think he does. Maybe he does. He'll wear that sweatshirt. He'll wear anything, I guess. Have a seat there. I had one of those. It fell apart on me.
I think this is pretty close, too.
Yeah. Did you work on the radio station down there? Or?
I was on the quiz on the radio.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Well, then you can't be on this. It disqualifies you.
It's been a long time, right?
Yeah, like 20 years, maybe?
Ventura was governor at the time. I know that was one of the questions.
Oh, yeah.
So it's 98, 99, somewhere
okay,
in that range.
There. Okay, all right. You know about our contest, the longest listener contest?
I heard it last week, yeah.
Yeah.
So. I don't think I qualified. I didn't hear it at the beginning.
Well, you know, you can lie.
Okay.
The figures aren't important. Right. The anecdotes are better, you know, about what it meant to your life and happiness and eventual success.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not on the radio anymore there. Yeah.
Well, that's a problem, of course.
That's a problem in Minnesota. But,
that's always a problem for a radio show, actually. It requires radios to be on.
Thanks to podcasts, I walk in the dog. I listen to you every week then.
Yeah. The dog seems to like it.
I don't think he pays much attention.
That's a good thing. And what are you doing these days, John?
I'm an IT worker at the state of Minnesota.
Was that a good thing then? Or?
For me, yeah, it's good. So yeah. I used to be a programmer, project manager. I work on procurement contracts. It's
you don't
very
have to
exciting.
Say, have you tried plugging it in?
No, I don't do that anymore. No.
Okay. But you did do that, huh?
Similar things like that, yeah.
All right. You see that switch there? You push that button.
Yeah, exactly. I do that with my mom, though. So.
You got to do that. All right, John, someone out there plays along with you. Let's see if we can repeat your success of 1998.
We'll try.
And we have various categories, don't we, Sarah?
Well, first he needs a partner. Somebody's got to call in.
Oh, yes. We have various ways of getting on the show, don't we?
We do. Well, pretty much only one, which is that somebody at home picks up the phone and dials 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question.
Oh, the qualifying question. I've got it right here, as a matter of fact, at my fingertips. We're looking for a percentage here now, so within a few percentage points?
Yeah, a few. Some.
Sorry about that. Are you doing your crossword puzzles here?
No.
Percentage of Americans who think that the new Congress will do the same or less as the old Congress. So we're looking for a percentage here. And within, let's say we get within 5-6% of it. The percentage of Americans who think the new Congress will do about the same or even less as the old Congress. So give us a percentage there. If you get within a reasonable amount, then you get to qualify and play here with John. Let's go to the phones right now. That's the question. Steve's on the line from Rochester, New York. Hey, Steve.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing real well today.
Sound yesterday not so good, but today's good, huh?
Yeah, I'm a Bears fan, so.
Oh, no.
You can hang up on me now.
Yeah, those two words don't usually go together anymore. But you got a new coach now, so it'll all be good.
It'll all be good. Next year.
Next year, yeah.
I'll enjoy the game tomorrow, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you will. Okay, fine. Me, I'm not so sure. Steve, percentage of Americans who think that Congress will do the same or less?
63.5.
Holy cow, it's 62%, Steve. It's your lucky day. 25% think they'll do a lot better and more. So
it's okay. Not even my birthday.
Yeah, how about that?
Everybody else is having one.
Yeah, yeah. What are you doing these days, Steve? You're working?
I'm retired.
You're retired? What was your field?
Sales. Construction sales.
Construction sales, yeah. And are you enjoying your retirement?
Immensely.
Yeah. What are you doing? Like, things?
Nothing.
Nothing? Is that a good thing to do?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. Do you like to vary it up a little bit? Do different nothings?
Yeah, I'd like to do something, go to Hawaii.
Yeah, and do nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be the thing to do. Steve, this is John. He's your partner.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, John.
And the two of you guys work together. You collaborate, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Is that enough bonding there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
How about you, Steve? How's that?
Not good.
Okay, that's fine then, because just a couple of guys, Steve and John, they're playing the quiz. Let's not make too much of it. Okay, and what categories do we have now?
They are the same as last time. Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Steve, you picked the first one. What would you like?
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends could be anything. Let's see if it is. Do dreams get weirder or less weird as the night wears on?
Weirder.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Weirder.
Weirder?
Sure.
Weirder is right. They get way weird. Trust me on this one. I'm the expert. That's from the Smithsonian, actually. Steve, do you have your radio on there?
Yes.
Could you turn it down or off or something?
Turn that off.
If I hear myself, I go crazy. I mean, literally crazy. Something
sounds
happens.
Good.
I have my synapses all fried. What's
the categories left are current
events. Did you say how many that was?
Oh, that's one right.
Okay, let's try.
Zero wrong.
Keep order here.
Yeah, so the categories left are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Okay.
John? Let's go places.
Okay, where do you want to go?
Hawaii.
Most likely to skip church for a really crucial football game. Are people in one of the following parts of the country, is it the East, the West, or the South? Like, by the way, I couldn't find the Midwest. Isn't that weird? They were left out of this. These are the three they listed.
The South, you think, Steve? What do you think?
East, West, or South? Most likely to skip church for a crucial football game. East, West, or South?
South, yeah. They're football fans.
Yeah, I kind of agree with the South.
No, I'm sorry. It's the West.
Oh, wow.
Which Seattle happens to be in. So they should be in church, those people, instead of screaming their heads off. Anyway, that would be...
That's one right and one wrong.
Oh, we're in the Midwest. I'll tell you, people go to church, but the priest lets you know the score periodically. That's the difference. So he updates you. And I know that's actually happened in Green Bay. I know that for a fact. Okay.
The categories remaining are current events, people, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Okay.
Steve? People.
People. This could be survey results. Yes, it could be survey results. Are women or men more likely to dance in private? Private dancing. Women or men?
So it's one or the other is more likely?
That would be the women or men part, yes.
Okay.
I don't know how you could otherwise interpret that. It's like talking to my wife now. How could you... Where's the ambiguity in that? I don't see it.
How about men, Steve? Are you a public dancer?
No, I'm a private dancer.
This surprising. Oh, see, the surprising answer.
Oh.
Women or men far more likely to dance in private.
Women?
Women?
What do you think, Steve?
Sounds better.
Yes, women. 2/3 of women dance in private. Did you know that? Well, you don't know that because it's in private. Holy cow.
That's two right and one wrong.
Only 39% of men dance. I dance in private. I'll share that with you. I make a lot more than a single buck, too, if you saw what I did. In my shirt pocket. How insulting is that to stick it in my shirt pocket?
They'd like to see you dance, Michael.
No, they wouldn't.
The categories left are current events, things you should have learned in school, or science.
John?
Current events.
Current events. Okay, current events. Current events. Oh, here it is. Current events. What kind of fungus has been found growing wild in Buckingham Palace Gardens? I'll give you a hint. It's hallucinogenic.
Bioluminescent?
You got to get your information from other shows for some of these. Yeah, they turned up something growing in the gardens there at Buckingham Palace. Probably Harry planted them.
Mushrooms?
That's what I'm thinking. You're saying mushrooms?
Mushrooms?
You're saying hallucinogenic mushrooms?
Sure, that's what I'm saying.
He's saying that,
Steve. Mushrooms sounds good.
Yes, it does sound good. And
all
that's
right.
What it was, called fly. Amanita muscaria. Holy cow, they've won the quiz.
John, you've won a selection of artisanal cheeses made in Wisconsin, as well as foreign countries like England, France, and Minnesota from the friendly folks at Fromagination.
Foreign countries like Minnesota?
On Madison's historic Capitol Square. Steve, you can make sure your parrot is never home alone again with the Bird Sitter DVD, supplying a virtual flock of hundreds of parrots to give your bird constant mental stimulus and a happier and healthier existence from Parrot University. And both of you can evoke memories of dinner in Grandma Carmela's kitchen with a jar of house marinara sauce from Carmela's Italian Bistro in Appleton, Wisconsin, and swoon to the lush romantic music of Old Mother Russia on the CD What Do You Know About Rachmaninoff with decidedly post-romantic liner notes by Michael Feldman from Nimbus Records. Congratulations to both.
Hey, John, congratulations. You won again. We got to get you a new shirt.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Hannah Poth, Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook. Technical director Tom Blaine with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Special thanks to our guests, Tony Hale and Edward Slingerland. This is Stephanie Lee, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know.
Public Radio International.